Support comes from Hampton Roads Community Foundation, partnering with donors from all walks of life to improve Southeastern Virginia through grants, scholarships, and leadership initiatives. Learn more at HamptonRoadsCF.org.
Hello, everyone. I'm Barbara Ham Lee. In addition to excelling in their chosen professions, many African-American professionals have the added stressors of racial trauma, workplace discrimination, and underrepresentation. Being an only or the first, being overlooked for promotions, having every decision questioned, code switching to fit in, and dealing with daily microaggressions can lead to mental health challenges unique to those in charge. Up next on Another View, Dr. Alvion Lyons, Dr. Harold Neighbors, and Dr. Keith Newby on mental health in the professional space. That's next on Another View, right after this national, regional, and local news from NPR and WHRO News.
Discussing today's topics from an African-American perspective, this is Another View.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Another View. I'm Barbara Ham Lee. I am still smiling and walking on cloud nine after receiving the Lenora Matthews Lifetime Achievement Award last week from Volunteer Hampton Roads. Thank you to everybody who came out in support, and it was a wonderful evening, and I am so very, very grateful. And we also want to welcome Brian Saunders. He is the newest reporter with WHRO News. He will be covering our city, the city of Norfolk, my city that I live in. and so we welcome you, Brian, to the family, and wishing you well in doing this work. So today's edition of Another View on Health will tackle a problem not easily discussed among African-American professionals: what to do when you face a mental health challenge. The recent murder-suicide of Dr. Serena Fairfax and former Lieutenant Governor Justin Fairfax shocked the nation and rocked the Black community. Social media blew up with people taking sides and playing the blame game. We are not doing that on today's show. What we are going to do is have a serious conversation about the social-emotional stressors professional Black people face, and answer the question, where do you go for help, especially when everyone thinks that you have it all together? Dr. Alvion Lyons is a research relationship expert, leadership consultant, author, podcaster, and you know her best as a pundit on the Another View Roundtable. Hey, Alvion.
Good afternoon, all.
So glad to have you back with us again. Dr. Harold Woody Neighbors is the director of the Man Up, Man Down Research Program and professor emeritus, Health Behavior and Health Equity School of Public Health at the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, and he is joining us by phone. How are you, Dr. Neighbors?
I'm doing very well. Glad to be here.
Good. Thank you so much for joining us. And, of course, our favorite cardiologist and my co-host for Another View on Health is here, the incomparable.
Oh man.
The incomparable Dr. Keith Newby.
Oh, well, thank you. Man, I tell you, checks in the mail.
Checks in the mail. Oh, gosh. Well, I'm glad we are able to chuckle, but this is a serious topic. And I'm going to start with this because I thought back as I'm thinking about this show and so forth. I attended a women's financial empowerment seminar a little while ago, and an African-American CEO said, if you are a CEO and you don't have a therapist on speed dial, you're in trouble. Mm-hmm. Do you agree with that, Alvion?
100%. 100%.
Why?
Well, see, part of that has to do with the level of responsibility that the CEO carries, right? Mm-hmm. Much like the experience we have in families and parenting, that the kids look to us to find out, are we hurt? When they fall down, when something goes wrong, they look at us and, am I in trouble? Am I hurt? Is this irreparable, right? Mm-hmm. And the responsibility that we feel as parents to have it together, have the answer, be able to protect you, take care of you, all of those things, while particularly in a situation where our kids actually get hurt, we're terrified on the inside. But we know we can't express that because we have to be able to support our child. So we swallow what we're experiencing. CEOs have exactly the same experience. Their job is to look like, speak to, be there for the people that are entrusted in their care. But that often means that they're stuffing their own stresses, fears, worries, concerns. That's going to come out somewhere. So if you do not have a method by which you have good counsel, be it godly or therapeutic, whatever that is, to have good counsel as a place to offload that stress and process it effectively, the body will keep score. And there are consequences always associated with that.
Dr. Neighbors, when you think about the challenge or the steps that it takes to become a professional in the first place, and you are a person of color, particularly you study men, what are some of the things that they go through that may be unique to them as opposed to other men in other spaces?
Yeah, speaking as a black man, by the way, I wholeheartedly endorse the idea of having a therapist on speed dial. I do have a therapist. He's not on speed dial, but maybe I'll talk to him.
Upgrade his status.
Yeah. It never occurred to me I could get to him that quickly. But yeah, I mean, there are many layers to this whole notion of getting help. I mean, the way I think about this is the bottom line is, what we say in Man Up, Man Down is, if you feel something, say something. So over the course of this conversation, you know, I'm going to be trying to fight hard against this whole idea of we men isolating ourselves precisely when we need the help of others. But, you know, speaking, you know, personally, what I went through and, you know, what my research has shown me is that, you know, as a black man born in the 50s, I was just really carrying a lot of heavy weight to demonstrate not only to my family and my community, but to the broader world that I was indeed somebody and that I was going to be successful. And to do that, I really did have to present this image that I had it all together. My shorthand for that is, you know, tough guy syndrome. You know, I wanted to be a tough guy, and that meant I really could show no vulnerability. And I learned over the years that that was a mistake. And, you know, I'm sure in the course of this conversation, we'll probably get into some of that.
Are you there?
In the professional space. Those of us in the professional space, but just, you know, most of the guys I've talked to are all trying to make it to a certain place where they can not only feel successful, but they're providing resources for family and community.
Keith, do you, as you're sitting here listening to this, and obviously you're an accomplished professional, when you think back over your career, were there things that you saw happen to other professionals that did not happen or for you as you're trying to build as a black man?
Yeah, I think a lot of it comes in terms of your life experiences. You know, I think about it, when I reflect back, because a lot of people say like having a therapist on speed dial. I never thought about that. Not because I'm all that, because I really don't feel that way. I think, you know, sometimes life experiences have you feeling a different way. I had a pastor one time share with me that said, you always bring your baggage into relationships, which is true when you really think about it. So, you know, when I think about my life, you know, I lost my father at 7. So it was, you know, my mom was really tough on us growing up, but not in a bad way, but she was about our business. And she was like, since you're a single parent raising 3 children, you know, my husband dies at 41. I got to raise these 3 kids and figure out how am I going to do that and make sure they're successful. And I think we actually all doing that pretty well, but I got footprints back here to prove exactly, you know, why that happened that way. But, you know, we were brought up in a way that did exemplify toughness and directness. I don't necessarily think in a bad way, but I've seen mm-hmm. other challenges other people have gone through, and I do think that those experiences do help guide you and shape you. And I was just blessed and fortunate that I did not go down other paths, because I could have when I was younger. I have my challenges now, you know, because I tested the waters quite a bit as a youngster. And, you know, when I think about how my life could have turned out, but I was just a blessed guy and I was able to come into it. But once I knew, especially what I wanted to do with my life, yeah. it was on after that. But, you know, you do get run into a lot of challenges where people try to question you because of your background, your racial background, whatever. And you feel that sometimes you don't get treated as fairly, or somebody thinks you're not capable. But that toughness that we had growing up, that was like, you know, remember when I did a Fort Norfolk building, you know how much fighting I had to do to get that building up? But people yeah. were like so convinced that I could never pull it off. I was not qualified. Mm. And I'm looking at them like, well, what makes you able to judge me and what I can do and what I can't do? But those are just those things that my life's experiences taught me growing up. Mm-hmm. So I was very fortunate, but I do have a lot of my colleague friends that have had really tough experiences coming up and have really gotten close to the brink, you know, that I, and I've had to try to help them, you know, and that's the thing. You want to be able to bring it out. You do want to be able to say those things that are troubling you, and you do want to have people to talk to about it. You know, I'll tell you one quick thing. I remember in my church, we had a, this was several years ago, we had a special guest came in on a Saturday. It was like a men's day kind of thing. And it was kind of interesting when you get men in a room that don't normally talk about personal things. Mm-hmm. The stuff that came out in that room, you know, was, I mean, and you'd never realize how much of a relief you get when you're able to convey things to people that you can talk to and have shared experiences. So there is a lot to say about, and you know, positive things about having a outlet to be able to have those conversations, because a lot of times we as men, we do have to man up, you know, mm-hmm. we have to be tough. We have to be responsible. That's the way we're brought up to think this way.
Yeah.
So when you have those challenges and you don't feel you have anybody to turn to because you have to be tough, that's where I found that things can sometimes go awry.
You know, Dr. Neighbors, one of the things that you, I saw in just reading up on you and so forth, and you were talking about the conversations that men have where they say, man, how you doing? And you get fine, uh-huh. I'm good, you know, as opposed to I'm struggling or I need help with this. Why is that? Why don't men share like that?
Well, I mean, first I want to really reinforce what Keith just said. Uh-huh. You know, there's a lot of, you know, grace and good fortune, luck. All of that plays into this. And, you know, like Keith, I've been at that fork in the road many times trying to figure out which way to go. I didn't always go the right way. But I was lucky that, you know, overall things kind of worked out well for me. But, you know, the main problem is, I think as young men and as a young man, I mean, I got challenged pretty early in life by other men, other boys. I mean, it's like the first time you step onto the playground, you start learning about how we're basically jockeying for a position. You're going to get teased. Maybe you're going to get bullied. The first thing you learn is you can't show weakness, which means you cannot cry. So pretty early, you get divorced from your true emotions. And the second thing we learn pretty quickly is that if someone has hurt you, hurt your feelings, the best way to respond is through anger, and that further separates you from the true pain that you're feeling. So if you get that reinforced over the course of your life, what we say in Man Up, Man Down is that we start to learn to work ourselves into a corner of social isolation at the very time we need the help of others the most. And so the issue is, how do we self-correct that early learning experience? Mm.
Alvin, do women and men process the same way?
That's a loaded question.
Yeah, you know, careful how you answer. Right? The answer is we have all the same emotions. It's the way we express those emotions that looks different. So do we do the same math? Not necessarily, but are we both doing math? Yes, right? So it's very often, and I don't mean this with any disrespect to women, so women, please know I love you when I say this, okay? But I mean, I can't tell you how many times I have a conversation with a woman and it's like the equivalent of like 1 + 1 = 11, right? And I see the one and I see the one, but how you put those together, I'm not quite sure how those came together, right? And so the math happens. It's just what's inside the equation to get to that equal sign, right? Mm-hmm. So, and being a mother of both boys and girls, the depth of male emotion, I think we greatly underestimate. And so I watched how deeply my son loved, how quickly he got hurt, the way he leaned in, how he recovered or didn't recover from those feelings of hurt. It really helped me to be more understanding of my husband watching my son, because my husband's grown up with the be tough, the tough guy syndrome. You don't share a necessary emotion. But my son had not gotten there yet. So I got to see young boy experience with emotion and being able to project that onto your father probably has all those same feelings and emotions, but he has learned how to express those in ways that fit into the box that we draw for men in our society. So it made me wildly more empathetic to my husband raising my son. So I will say that we so underestimate those emotions, which is part of the reason that many therapists and mental health practitioners will tell you that male depression is frequently misdiagnosed because sadness is not considered a socially acceptable expression of emotion for men, but anger is. So you're allowed to be angry when you're sad, but you're not allowed to express sadness the way that we as women can multidimensionally express our sadness. And so it is not uncommon for men to find themselves in anger management classes or working through their anger. And we assume that it is anger that we are seeing, but anger is just the other side of sadness. So when we talk about, even when we look from a societal perspective, and Martin Luther King spoke to that, but that riots are the voices basically of the unheard.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, from an onlooker's perspective, that's angry emotion, rather than recognizing that this is what pent-up sadness and grief looks like when released. It is no different for men. So the answer is that we all have the range of emotions, but we are socialized into the ways in which we can express those emotions. And as people of color, it's even more complex because think about mothers losing children and people are deciding on television whether she was too angry in her communication about what happened to her son, as if women of color are not allowed to express anger when they're hurt because now America can't relate because she's angry, rather than if she cries on television and she shows weakness and smallness, now we could be more empathetic to her loss. So we are all socialized with what is dimensionally acceptable for us in this society, and rarely is it the honesty of the emotion we're actually experiencing.
So I'm curious. Yeah. Oh, go ahead, Doctor. Go ahead, Woody.
Yeah, I just wanted to really, I really hope that everyone heard that statement. You know, it's the socialization of what's appropriate in expressing how we feel. And I'm just amazed at how early in my life I started learning to disassociate from the pain, whatever that pain was, and learn how to express myself with anger. And that was a very traditional, quote unquote, manly way to be. But what I started to notice over time, that if you have a very quick anger response, first of all, it's dangerous. You're facilitating confrontation. But also, it can clear the room. You're actually moving people away from you when in reality, what you need is people to move toward you.
Absolutely.
And, you know, what we've tried to do in Man Up, Man Down is flip that script around and still have men appreciate that they are, quote unquote, masculine. So these early boxes that we are put in, I mean, I started learning this probably at the age of 5, are really hard to change, but they can be done through, I mean, they can be modified through not only introspection, but these kinds of conversations that we're all having. Last thing I want to say, just to reinforce what Keith said, we found in our work that if you can get a group of black men into a room where they feel safe, we will start talking to each other about the kind of things that we have been keeping quiet for many, many years. It is possible to do that. We were told we couldn't do it, but we did it.
Can I just say one quick thing about
absolutely.
That? So what's really interesting, and I take great pride in this, but the number of times that I've gotten to be the speaker for a men's conference. So I'm the only woman present at the conference in a room full of men. And what's very interesting to Dr. Neighbor's point is that safety, creating an environment of safety is fundamental. Psychological safety is fundamental to honesty, right? And so I always have to start my conferences by speaking to what's so good about the men who are sitting inside of that room. The fact that on a Saturday, a Friday, or whatever, that you are the kind of men that would want to carve out time to be this vulnerable, this open, this honest, to be able to grow together, that already sets you aside and apart from everyone else. And beginning at a space where men get to hear, which is unfortunately more rare than we acknowledge, good things about themselves out of the mouths of women completely changes the room. And many times it has been complained when they found out that I was the speaker, that what is she going to be able to tell us, right?
Yeah.
And then when it's over, how beautiful it is for men to be able to say that, thank you, because I'd never get to hear good things about myself on a regular basis. We don't realize the greatest complaint most men have is that they never hear thank you. We, as women, often say that, like, oh, I don't feel seen, I don't feel da-da-da-da, and I'm not underestimating any of those, but our focus is about men. Mm-hmm. The most common complaint that I hear is that I never feel like I'm appreciated. I almost never hear thank you for all of the things that I do sacrifice, what I'm trying to do, what I tried to do and couldn't do perfectly, or at her standard. They don't hear thank you.
She's telling the truth. I mean, to be honest with you, just hearing it, I'm enjoying listening to her talk. But I tell you, that is probably the number one thing. When I did that conference that I was mentioned earlier, that was the one comment that every man that was married in that room said, was that they feel unappreciated. And most men, including myself, we don't need to hear that a lot. But you do want to hear it sometimes. And you want to at least feel like, because you do what you do as a man. That's part of who we are. We protect, we provide, we do all those things. But it's nothing better than when your spouse demonstrates any appreciation. It almost brings a peace to your life. Because I think about even in my day, you know, I'm up at 4 every morning. I get home 9, 10 o'clock every night. That's just standard. So when you come home, that's like your place of your fortress of solitude.
Yeah.
You know, you say, okay, I need
it's
to
sanctuary.
Bring it down a notch or two, and to be able to come in a place that you feel you're safe, you're at home. You can come in and, you know, and you don't need a lot, but just that hug, that little bit of something, oh, good to see you. You know, things like that do have significant impact, and it does allow us to be able to function more effectively. You know, because, you know, I tell you, it's interesting, and let me ask you this question.
Sure.
Who, in terms of men and women, when you see and you're doing counseling, who initiates more divorces, men or women, or is it equal?
It's typically women.
Yeah.
It's almost, and what's interesting is that most of the men are surprised by it. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you another note. Most of the men don't realize something is wrong in the marriage until the intimacy stops. As long as the physical intimacy is still going on in the marriage, most of them don't even realize that the marriage is already in trouble. Because they're so focused on just doing their job, whatever they perceive their job to be. Mm-hmm. And the reward for doing the job is being able to be close to their woman in that kind of way, in a lot of ways. That is their thank you, so to speak. And until all of that, when that stops, that's the first time that most of them realize something is wrong. And generationally now, as younger generations who are growing up with this concept that did not exist before, to be honest, where your partner is your friend, they're picking it up earlier because of the emotional investment. But in older couples or more mature couples, it is rare that the men know that it's in trouble until the women have almost how we call it quiet quitting at work. The women have silently divorced long before they're actually sitting inside of the counseling session.
There's so many different ways I can go with this. I don't even know what to do. So I'm going to give the phone number 757-440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240 are the numbers to call to join our conversation. We're talking about emotions that all of us experience, but I really want to hear particularly from those of you in the professional space, because we are so perceived to always have it together and that we don't face these issues, and we do. And that's why we're talking about it. 757-440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240. Alvian, I want to go back to something that you said when you were talking about watching your son, which was beautiful. But I wonder what your husband's response was in watching him go through those same things, because I mean, was he comparing to how he grew up and how he was socialized, or was he more open to saying there's a better way and it's more important for us to talk and to open up?
So that's such an interesting question. My husband is listening, so we'll see how this goes later on. But so I would say that we both, and we totally acknowledge it, have different ways in which we approach parenting our children. My husband is softer on my girls than I am. And
sounds about right.
Yep. And I'm tougher where they're concerned, because I know what they're, in my head, I know what you're going to face as women in the world.
In the world. Mm-hmm.
I want you prepared for that. There's an old adage that says that mothers raise their daughters and love their sons.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's true. It's not to say that we don't love them both, but what it's speaking to is our fundamental need, same gender, to prepare the gender for the world they're going to experience. So my husband is tougher on my son than he is with my daughters, because he wants to make sure that he is going to be able to survive the realities of manhood in a space where everybody doesn't love you and think you're wonderful, baby. Mommy might love you and think you're wonderful, but I want you to know when you leave this house, what they want
it's
is your competence and your dependability and your maturity.
But that kind of goes back to that comment about why it's important to have two parents in the household.
The balance.
Because that balance and act, you know, because that's the only thing that Peggy and I will have arguments about. The only thing. We never argue about money, how we never argue about politics. We never argue about anything except raising Marcella. You know, I mean, because as a young lady, she, same thing. She says, I'm trying to prepare her for what
for
she's
what
going
she's
to deal with.
Uh-huh.
See, then on the end of my end, I got this young lady, Daddy.
Right.
You know, and I'm just like, oh,
do anything,
what you want,
baby?
Automatic ATM. And it's just the nature. Yeah, she does. I mean, you know, they rap big time.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the unique mental health challenges faced by African-American professionals and where they turn for help. My guests are relationship expert Alvian Lyons, Dr. Harold Woody Neighbors, director of the Man Up, Man Down Research Program at the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, and my co-host for Another View on Health, cardiologist Dr. Keith Newby, 757-440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240 are the numbers to call to join our conversation. Are you an African-American male, professional male, and you don't speak up right now? Are we changing your mind? Are we helping you to see a different way? Give us a call and let's talk about it. 757-440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240. Yes, Dr. Neeby.
Woody, I have a question.
Yeah, I'd like to.
Yeah, Woody.
Hold on, Woody. He wants to ask you a question.
Real quick.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, sure.
In your professional life and career, what do you see as to what drives men to feel they have no way out? Because you know the subject I would touch as it relates to the Fairfax issue is he obviously felt like he had no way out. In your experience, are there certain things or factors that lead men to that conclusion that this is their only way out? I know that's a hard, tough question, but I wanted to see just in terms of being able to identify those who may be at the biggest risk of going down a different path. Are there signs, things that you have seen in your experience that can say this person is really, truly in trouble?
Yeah, and I think the no way out is the real problem, that trying to get over that hurdle. And that's what I was trying to express earlier in my remarks. It starts very early where we feel we are alone when we really are not alone. But the reason we think we're alone is because we have learned to put on a mask. We've talked a lot about feelings and accessing feelings and some of this overlap and similarity between men and women. So I think what happens to the men I've known, and it has happened to me, I felt like I had no choice but to soldier on, to keep going. And one of the comments I wanted to make is exactly related to your question. There seems to be among men, particularly Black men, that there's almost nothing more important than work, the job. Mm. And the reason the job and the work is so important is precisely what you mentioned earlier. We want to be a valuable resource for our family. That's all I ever wanted to do, you know, bring home the money and we could share it and live a better life. If you start to show any sign of weakness or that you quote unquote don't have it all together, that contradicts that image of I'm here to provide as much as I can for this family unit. And when you start to get in trouble, you are worried about taking off that mask of invulnerability because you're not sure how people are going to react to you. So what I learned over the course of my life, learned the hard way, because eventually you're probably going to be hit with something that is very, very stressful. And that happened to me, where I had to take off my mask and express my vulnerability. And guess what? My world did not fall apart. It actually got better. So this is the experience that we need to share with all the other men who are listening, that it's not the end of the world to express to someone that you could use a little bit of assistance. So we say, you know, manning up might work some of the time, but it is not going to work all the time. You cannot expect to be able to man up by yourself to every curveball that life is going to throw at you. So sometimes manning up will result in a man going down. But if you're willing to talk about it, you can be man up again in no time at all.
So, Alvin, let me ask you this then. Because it sounds also to me that trust is a major factor in all of this. And especially if you are an accomplished person, we all live in this crabs in a barrel society where, you know, everybody's looking for that one up to bring somebody else down. How do you know where to go to find the person you can trust that they're not going to take your vulnerability and run with it in a negative way? Because I think that that's part of the reason also men and women, quite frankly, sometimes don't go to get help because they're afraid that somebody's going to take that information and use it against them.
Right. So I would say to you that, Barbara, if we knew the perfect answer to that question, we'd all be billionaires.
Yes.
Okay. So, but what I can tell you is that there are no healthy relationships that you're ever going to have in your life that won't have scars associated with it. There's no level of connectivity that any of us are going to have without ever having experiences and where the connection ended up being a painful thing. But if you think about it from the perspective of, I talk about this in conferences sometimes, when we get hurt in relationships, our natural inclination is to try to do everything we can to avoid that pain in the future, right? And so I equate it to having, imagine your heart in your hand, right? And you're able to dissect it. How appropriate.
For the cardiologist, yes.
The cardiologist in the room, right? Okay. So let's just say you got your heart broken relationally or in friendship, because it can happen in any of those. And quite honestly, it even happens with work when your whole heart is in the job that you do and something goes wrong. And so what you calculate in your head is, I'm never going to get that hurt again. I know I have to put myself out there, but I'm never going to let myself get hurt like that again. So what we do, particularly from a relationship perspective, is that we dissect our heart. And we now, this time, instead of putting 100% of my heart out there, I'm only going to put 50%. I'm going to hold the other 50 in my back pocket, right? Mm. And so then what ends up happening is, because the math we did is, I could survive if this gets hurt because I've already protected enough for myself in the background, right? But the problem that happens from that is that we also, if we do that math consistently, relationally, we will also find ourselves feeling like nothing ever feels like I'm fully loved, appreciated, seen, or valued. But part of the reason that that's the case is because only 50% of the real you is out there in the first place, right? So you never get to experience whether someone can fully love you because you won't fully put yourself out there. So the risk associated with the securities is to always live not fulfilled, fully seen, valued, appreciated, loved, right? So in order to determine who is safe to be vulnerable with, we have to risk complete destruction. There's no way to get around that. I am not saying that the minute you meet somebody, you put everything on the table. So please don't hear that. Mm-hmm. What I am saying is, as you gradually pour out who you are, how someone handles the privilege of the intimacy of knowing you tells you how much more of yourself you can pour. But you have to be willing from the beginning going in to pour out all. Everybody ultimately gives you signals as to whether you are safe or not safe. Just don't ignore the signals that are provided to you, and you can avoid some measure of the unnecessary.
And that
pain.
Goes for male men and women. That's across
and
the board.
And in every environment, to
in
be
every
honest.
In every environment.
You're probably the most insightful person, I think. I'm like, man, I mean, you got this down packed. But, you know, but the points are extremely valid. You know, we do, as men, we do hold back, you know, because we don't want to risk that piece, because, you know, and it's kind of interesting. Sometimes I'll hear women talk about how vulnerable they are. Men are just, if not more so, vulnerable, because we could be like little kids when we're ready to be, you know, and we look for that that wife or spouse not like your mother, but it's just that nurturing that you look for your wife to be able to provide is reminiscent to the nurturing you experienced as a child with your mother. And that feeling that you can just relax, a woosah, so to speak, mm-hmm. you know, and mm-hmm. just be with that person, you know, a lot of us will hold back. And that's one of the things that I would say that we have to learn how to do that more so. The women on the other end, I really hope they hear some of this to say, okay, how do I meet this person's needs? And it's kind of like, you know, I hear
and meeting their needs does not mean giving up yourself.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying mm-hmm. being able to understand, because everything to me in relationships is about how you understand your spouse or your mm-hmm. partner. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times I hear this stuff a lot because of what I do every day, and I hear mm-hmm. the spouses complaining about their other spouses, blah, blah, blah. And I always ask them, well, what's your part in all this? You know, what have you done to improve the situation? And I'm not dismissed because I don't know your spouse, but I'm just asking you, as your part of your responsibility, what do you do that fosters relationship in a positive way? Mm-hmm. Not just what you think he or she should be doing for you, but what are you doing for the other person? Because you think about, you know, not getting biblical, but you think about Apostle Paul said, men love your wife as Christ loved the church. That's unconditional love, you know, and I don't even worry about what he says about the wives, you know, obey your husband. I get beat up for that one, but but I'm talking about just on our responsibility.
Just on their responsibility.
It is, and we do oftentimes want to do that. And I do think sometimes when we hold back, that we hold back some of ourselves back, which doesn't allow that opportunity to be your full self. And I think that does lead to your inability to deal with stresses as diligently or as preparedly as you could be if you had that person there. The downside, though, is on the flip side of that is, you know, as I said, women say, well, I ain't trying to be your mama, you know, right. which I do understand. But being that partner, you know, and both parties equally or as best you can, being that rock for the other person can have merit.
Woody, one of the things that I know people across the board, particularly people of color, say about going to see a therapist, going to look for professional help, is that they can't find people who look like them, who understand their experience, lived experiences, because they've lived that experience. Do you think that's one of the barriers for men in terms of why they may not see, they're the lowest to seek professional help of all of the, mm-hmm. If you look at black men, black women, white women, and white men. Yeah. They're the lowest in terms of going.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, all of the things we've been talking about are barriers for men seeking help. And then you overlay all of those problems with the big one, and that is race. Racial differences. So absolutely, we don't have enough black therapists out there. So that's the first issue. That's a problem that we have to correct through our training program. But second of all, I will say that that's not an insurmountable barrier. You know, when I was in a situation where I knew I needed psychoanalysis, and I looked around and I ended up with a white male, and we had to get to know each other. I mean, I have a lot of trust issues, mistrust issues. But fortunately, you know, I had the time to kind of work my way into this new relationship. So that is an issue. I would say to people, don't let that shut the door. You can find a black therapist, but it is going to be hard. And if you can't, don't give up on it.
Find somebody.
I just want to have a real quick response to what Keith said earlier. It took me many years in my marriage to ask myself the question, what is my part in it? Early in my marriage, I think I thought my part was 0%. I'm trying to blame my wife for everything. And over time, what I learned was, you know, that's the most ridiculous thing I could be thinking of. And now my answer to Keith's question, when I ask myself, what's my part? It's always at least 50%, no matter what happens. I got to own up to at least half of it. And then when I'm really honest, I understand sometimes it's 75 to 80% my fault, my problem. I'm doing something wrong. But, you know, you got to look in the mirror and try to tell the truth. And for a lot of us, it's really hard to face that person in the mirror and tell them what's really going on.
Yeah, just to go ahead.
So two quick things. One, going back to something that Keith said, that scripture that speaks to husbands love your wives. Well, the other part of it is wives respect your husbands, right? And the only reason I bring that in is you asked me before about the differences in emotions between men and women. Mm-hmm. And it's that men who feel respected feel loved. Women who feel loved feel respected. So we start at different places and end at the same place, but we have to know the uniqueness of our respective wirings, because when a man feels disrespected, I don't care how much you tell him you love him, he doesn't feel loved because of the fundamental need for respect. A woman who does not feel the coddling softness of your love immediately feels like you're not respecting her either. And it comes from two different places, but they land at the same place. So I just wanted to give the B part to that scripture. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I would say, and to moms everywhere, and I own this too, so I'm not, this is in no judgment, but we help make these boys who become men. And what we have to do is stop raising boys that we wouldn't want to be married to. Okay? So.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
He's so, not used to Alvin's honesty.
No. I love it. I love it.
So I'm just saying, I've messed up too, y'all. Okay. Like some of the ways in which we coddle our sons, I want to use a different word than the one that was about to slip out, but we make it more challenging for their partners because we created something that we were not prepared for someone else to be responsible for the rest of that. Right. And so sometimes we need to let our husbands do some of the things that they do to toughen up our boys, because they also understand not just what society is going to want, but what the woman is going to want from him too. And so it's the making room for each other as equally valuable inside of the math that ultimately constructs this healthy human being that we're trying to put out into the world.
All right, I'm going to try to get this. That. Go ahead. You like that?
That was very well said. I love it.
Let's see if we can talk to Mark from Norfolk. Hi, Mark. You're on the air.
Yeah, good afternoon. I'll be very quick. Okay. I'm missing one big thing here, and that is Justin Fairfax, his thing was triggered by, appropriately, you call it being the ultimate consummate professional. You know, he had risen to the ranks of lieutenant governor, and that was a big deal. And I think what we really, being we're talking about black people and black professionals, honestly, I think we're confused as if when Obama was elected that we were post-racial. And I think what Dr. Newby spoke to was he was able to stay on his project and stay focused, because it sounds to me that his mother told him that he was always going to be black in America. And I think by us being able to gravitate to higher learning, gaining degrees on paper, being able to go different places, we have lost, I think, our realm of expectations of society. And now that we've lost those expectations, we've gotten softer, so that when disappointments come, we act like we're surprised, when we really should not be at all.
Thanks for the call, Mark. I appreciate that. I don't mean to cut you off, but we're almost out of time. Yeah, I want Dr. Newby to respond.
Well, that was just a good point. I mean, I think he's absolutely right, because the world's not going to always be your oyster. You know, you're going to have some hard times in there, and being able to face that and know how to deal with it. You know, that's where sometimes I found up, because anytime I always joke when you made a comment about raising boys, because when I have a 40-plus-year-old man come in with his mama to the doctor, see me, I'm looking like, why is your mama with you? And I hate to say it, but I'm flabbergasted. I'm like, what are you? You are like have some kind of disability or something? Why? I mean, but this is just unfortunately. So I've seen that time and time again. That's why I think two parents are great to have, because you do see that sometimes the men's ability to deal with adversity. If that's impacted negatively and they don't know how to deal with disappointment, you know, because of that. And it's tough when you think about in Fairfax's situation, when you were like the breadwinner. I mean, I know she was a professional too, but I think about him as a man. This is what I do. I am a provider. I am a protector. I do all this stuff. And now you're taking that away. And I have nothing left now. I mean, I can't get a job. I can't do this. I can't do that. And then you're like, well, what am I here for? My worth has been stripped from me. You know, so not justifying it. I'm just saying, I think in that person's mind, I think when you do have that part taken away, it is so tough. How do you deal with it? And I think that's where Woody's points comes in.
And that's one of the things that we want to make sure that people understand too. If you do find yourself in a crisis, or you just want to talk to somebody, go call or text 988 or text TALK to 741-741, or talk to your pastor, talk to your best friend, talk to somebody and get them out. Woody, we've got about 30 seconds left. I want you to just have an ending word of encouragement for men in particular.
The thing I would like to say in closing, and again, this has been great. Thanks for inviting me. Mm-hmm. Take off the mask. Tell the truth. You are not alone unless you choose to be alone. There are many people out there who want to help you if only you will say something. So if you feel something, say something. And the bottom line for me was what we say, talk the walk. And all that means is find one person that you would just go for a walk with. And I guarantee you, when you walk with someone, you will talk to them. You will talk to each other. And it opens up a whole new world.
Thank you so much. That's Dr. Harold Woody Nabors from University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. Thank you. Alvian, 30 seconds.
I would just say, it's one of my favorite quotes, that whatever we are not changing, we are choosing. So it is not about what has happened, because we can't fix what's already happened, but we're 100% responsible for what it is that we do next. So if we want health, we've got to choose it, and that requires action. And discomfort is part of the process of growth. Do not be afraid of that. Isolation is absolutely a guaranteed problem issue. So, okay.
Dr. Alvian Lyons, as always, thank you. And yeah. Dr. Newby, last 30.
Oh, okay. Well, I was thinking I was done.
No, you're not done. Now it's 15.
Yeah, okay. Well, I will say this. Seek help if you need it, please. Everything has been well said already. Seek the help, whoever that may be, because I tell you, you don't want to feel like you're alone in this world. So if it's prayer, if it's whatever you do, do it well, and do it often.
Thank you, Dr. Keith Newby, as always. And audience, if you're out there, if you need help, please call 988. That is the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline, actually, is what it's called. Or talk to someone that you love, that you trust. Reach out. There is help available, and you do not have to struggle alone. Share this show with someone you love. Go to whro.org/anotherview and download the podcast. Or you can check out our show on your favorite podcast platform. Next week on Another View, the Supreme Court further weakens the Voting Rights Act. What that means for the African American vote in this country, we're going to talk about it. Our theme music is an original composition created especially for Another View by Jay Sennett. Lisa Godley is our show producer. Jordan Christie is our audio engineer. And Dr. Barry Graham answered our phones. I'm Barbara Ham Lee. Thanks so much for listening. And let's get together again next Thursday at noon for Another View.
Support comes from Hampton Roads Community Foundation, carrying out your charitable wishes forever. Whether it's helping shelter animals, feeding the homeless, enhancing the arts, or supporting students. Learn more at leaveabequest.org.
www.bartonroads.org.